Okay, welcome back. And this is another session in the Developer's Guide to Windows 10. And Andy Wigley, and with me,
Shen Chen. Hi, everyone.
Right. And now this is going to be a fairly short session. We're going to talk a little bit about page navigation.
It's kind of important for everyone to know, right? But it's just...
Well, and the reason why I called this out is because it's kind of pretty basic stuff for anybody who... I mean, not for complete beginners, obviously. So hopefully this session will answer that for complete beginners. But actually, there's some real interesting stuff about how you provide... It's more about providing the UI, the ability for people to navigate back within apps in a universal way across all the different devices we've got. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So what we talk about here is, first a little bit about... at a high level about windowing and the layout, and then we're going to talk about the process of navigation between pages in your app. And then the big one is handling your back navigation. So yeah, that's the one. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about layout. So first of all, so some useful APIs for you. So now this is
actually really handy, especially when you're developing on your PC and you want to check to make sure it looks good on the phone. So it's just essentially it's just setting the preferred minimum size, right?
The reason why I've called this out is actually for two reasons. If you're an 8.1 developer, you would have been used to putting the app window min size into the manifest.
It's no longer there now.
Nope, you can't do that anymore. It's now actually an API call. And the default for when you create a file, new project, and you run it on desktop, the minimum window width is 500.
500 pixels, 500
is the default. Now, we're going to talk a little bit in the next session, about when we start talking about design, about pixel sizes. And we've got this unified,
effective logical
pixel size. Now, the smallest screen we've got, the phone, is 320 width. So if you're testing your app on Visual Studio and you're running it on the desktop, sure, you can run it on the phone emulator, but maybe you just want to do your adaptive UI without sort of running the emulator up, which is not hard, but it's just, you know. So actually, if you do this, set your new size to be 320, 500 or something, then effectively you can resize the window down to the size of a phone screen. And you might want to put a hash if debug if you really don't want to ship your release version with that window width on it. So, but anyway, this is how you can change the window width. Just had a question here. It's just thrown me off. But how do I test my app on my phone? Currently deployment fails because of the sub 10.240 version. Well, if you're clearly somebody who is on one of our Windows Insiders, and thank you for that. And we really welcome all feedback from our Windows Insiders. It's crucially important that we test this thing. We get your feedback on what's good and what's not.
There are a lot of people listening to that feedback.
And if you currently do not have 10.240 on your device, hang on in there, because we are rolling out updates all the time. So 10.240 and later will go out to our insiders, real soon.
Hang in there.
Yeah. Now, because we're talking about phones, so then here's the programmatically. So actually, most of the time you're going to want to allow the user to resize the window. And of course, here, let's be clear, we're only talking about UWP apps running in a window on a desktop.
Yes.
So that is user resizable. Not on tablet mode, because the user can dock things to the screen.
But that's different, right?
That's a different thing. This is where you're programmatically resizing the view. To be honest,
maybe there's a use case for it for some people. I personally don't have such a big use case. I let the user do whatever they want.
You could, in certain scenarios, think of an app where you might want to put some buttons on the UI on the screen that allows the user to sort of put to minimize the window view or something through a click and a button. Then you can do
see
it this way.
Sometimes when you want to forcefully trigger a VSM state, maybe that might be useful, because essentially you should be responsive across all sorts of
sizes. It should be user is king. You know, if the user wants that size window, then that's what they get. But anyway, this is how you can do it programmatically. Understanding immersive mode. We've struggled with the name for this, haven't we, for years? Modern UI, immersive,
full screen.
Yeah. So this week's flavor is immersive.
Immersive.
We're in immersive mode. So Jerry Nixon wrote this slide. So
okay.
If Jerry says it's immersive, then it must be right. So this is running full screen.
Yes.
A modern UI. And basically, this is the thing is, like we were saying about, if you're running in a window, it's only resizable. It's only resizable on desktop.
Yes.
Where you can resize the window. If the same app running on a phone, it's full screen.
It's just full screen. They don't have a window mode.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. On a tablet, you know, it tends to be full screen, but you can actually dock left or right. Or on really big touch screens, you can actually dock into a corner. So there's those different options. But essentially, the resizable window thing is something that only happens on desktop. So you can understand that. And also, as I showed in the first session, you can actually switch your Windows 10 desktop machine into tablet mode, even if you haven't got a touchscreen. But why you'd want to do that, I don't know. and for smart devices like the Surface Pro, you detach the keyboard and it will pop up a little UI. So
yeah,
if you want to switch to tablet mode.
Yeah, it'll ask you if you want to switch to tablet, which is quite handy.
Yeah, but you can actually turn it on yourself. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Those are the different options. So it's important to understand those different modes of operation. A little bit more about windowing. You can create new windows, new views, and you can switch between the different views. And you can try show as standalone. So there's different options for managing the way that windows are working on your desktop. And that's available across all of Windows 10. Each new view must call windows.activate. So there's various,
which
probably best
sense.
To look at the samples for that if you want to do this kind of thing and figure out how to do this thing. But just to make you aware that we're not talking about solely single window apps, you know, you can actually do this kind of stuff. Right, I've just been notified on the monitor that actually for phones, build 10512 has just been released. So if you're still on sub 10240, you should get this. Go and check in your updates and make sure you're still on the slow or the fast. Is that the fast ring, I wonder?
Probably the fast ring.
But anyway, that is going out to our Windows insiders right now. So there we go. That answers that one. Now then, let's talk about navigation. We'll start very simple, and then we'll get on to talking a bit more about sort of the back sort of thing. Now, in the last session, we were talking about the split view, and this kind of becomes interesting. So, a frame is the container for your pages, and it's something that if you go and dig down in, you file a new project and you dig down, you can actually see the frame being built.
Yeah, you'll see in the AppSaml CS where you'll see it creates a root frame and it sort of attaches to the window.
So in the kind of bootstrap code, but thereafter, as an app developer, you don't really have to worry about what a frame is. It's just there. It does become interesting. Well, tomorrow I'm going to talk about the app lifecycle. So a frame is important in the sense that it manages the navigation between pages. So this navigation, you can also, in more complex, so that's the basic project. If you're using a more highfalutin framework, such as Template 10 that Jeremy Nixon and others are building, then or you're using a framework, a pattern like MVVM, almost always you'll have something, you'll build something into those frameworks called a navigation service, which which handles the same for you. But essentially under the wrappers, it's still navigating within the frame. The thing that makes it happen in the XAML system is navigation within a frame. And you can navigate, whenever you navigate, whether you're using directframe.navigate or you're using a navigation service, you navigate always to the type of a page. So
So it's not a magic string or anything, it's actually a type.
So anybody who did Windows Phone Silverlight app, it was actually a magic string. But now you actually type the type of the page, you navigate to it, and you can pass a parameter. Now that parameter is usually thought of as a string.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be a string.
It's actually an object on the API.
It is actually typed as an object. But the reason why we can't often talk about strings is it needs to be serializable.
Yes.
So if you've got a complex object that doesn't naturally serialize to a string, and by that I mean if you put it through an XML serializer, assume it doesn't use JSON, does it? No. Doesn't use an XML serializer. If it barfs on it, then you need to actually put some code in it to help it serialize. So that's kind of a more advanced topic. So essentially, or you can serialize your object yourself to JSON. That outputs out a string and you can pass that. But essentially, it has to be something that can be serializable, because the frame, when we talk about app lifecycle, it actually saves, it keeps track of the app history.
It actually serializes that, right?
And it saves these navigation parameters. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, about why that's important from the user experience in terms of having the user kind of, it gets them back into the app even if it's been suspended. But this is why it needs to be serializable. So, and when you navigate to, you go on Navigator to a page, when you navigate into a page, that parameter gets passed into that page, and you can then use it to do stuff. Now I'm going to just show you a brief demo of this to kind of drill home this fairly simple stuff. So here we go. I've got a simple little demo on here. I'm just going to run it up first on the desktop so you can see what it does. It doesn't do very much. It's very, very nice and simple. Yeah, that failed.
Got a build failed.
Oh, okay. That's because I prepared this earlier and not cleanly enough. So let's just comment that out and try again. And now this time.
Drum roll.
This time, this stunning app with its amazing UI is built. Thank you. We're good. Here we go. It's called the lifecycle demo because actually we're going to come back to this tomorrow when we talk about lifecycle. Because page navigation and lifecycle are inextricably entwined. So,
yes.
But this is a very simple app. It has a single page called main page, and then you've got a button on it. It navigates to page one.
Page one.
It's got a backbone. We'll talk about that a little while. Yeah. That's it at the moment. Exciting. You're excited, aren't you? Shen is excited.
This sort of stuff is what I live for.
Now, this is simple, but it's important to get the basics right first. If we look at the main page, it had a button on it. There's a button event, and this is where we're saying it's talking. There is a property on every page called frame. This is frame.navigate to type of page one, which is what is happening. And then page one. Now then, let's add a new page to this. Add a new item.
Page two.
Yes. Now, here's a gotcha, first of all.
This sometimes trips me up.
Yeah. Now, there's this thing at the top, unhelpfully, called a XAML view, which we will talk about in the next session.
Yeah.
About what that is. If you want a page, that's not what you want.
No.
What you want is a blank page. This is the guy, which actually has a XAML view, doesn't have any code behind it. It has a special, specific use case. And like I said, we'll talk about that in the next session, but I don't want to talk about it now. But I'm going to change this to be page2.xaml. We can add this to our project.
There we go.
That's beautiful. I'm going to steal a bit of XAML because I'm lazy from page one. I could have put that in. That's not very tight. It's complicated, but anyway.
Yeah, you're demonstrating copy and paste in Visual Studio.
I'm really good at copy and paste. Yeah. There we go. And this is now it's going to be called page two. What I'm going to do though, actually, is go back to page one, and we're going to enhance page one a little bit, because I'm going to put onto this a text box. Go off to my toolbox, go and find a text.
And again, you could do this in Blend, right?
Yeah.
Because you are, you know, creating a user interface, dragging and dropping things around.
Yeah, and actually, that 14% is not a great design experience. No. Let's put that in that. So here's our text box. Let's put a header on it.
So I'm assuming you're going to take data from page one and then pass it off to page two via a parameter, and then you'll display it and
param to send to page two to send. Okay, and then this is the let's clear that out. So we'll get rid of that property altogether. Actually,
yeah.
And then I'm going to drag onto this a button to allow us to navigate to page two. So go off to our toolbox again. Let's go and get ourselves a button. There we go. There we go. That's our button. Content is to page two. And also I'm going to put on that a click event, which actually is that one under there, see? So the one that was sneakily in before, so there we go. I'm actually just going to restore that one that crept in and spoiled my demo earlier. Wrong one. There we go. And that's going to navigate to page two, and it's going to pass whatever the text is in that text box. So that's going to be our parameter. So all we need to do now is to just go down here and receive that. So the way to do that is to... The on-navigated to and on-navigated from are actually crucial to app lifecycle and navigation. And the way you can get at those is just type in the keyword override. Yeah. And then it'll give you a list of methods in the page class that you can override, including on-navigated to and from and on-navigating from. But we're interested in on-navigated to.
So it's probably key to point out here, your constructor doesn't always get called right every time your page loads because it might already be loaded.
That's right, there are
certain... That's where you have this method.
That's right. OnNavigator 2 is the page is built and now we're actually passing control to it. OnNavigator 2 is where you want to put your logic. And actually what I'm going to do is put in here message dialog, new message dialog, that's what I want. New message, I'm going to do a boring pop-up. Dialog, probably just going to wait for that to resolve, thank you. Using windows.ui to pop-ups. Yeah. And actually what I'm going to do is put a message you sent me, and then I'm going to add on to that string the value of the E, the navigation event args, and the parameter is in there. So the parameter is going to be, we're going to put that out, you sent me that, and then I'm going to show async that.
Yep.
Show async.
And obviously with async you need to...
Well, I can either put an async keyword on that, or we can, with this, I just tend to put a var I equals, and then just then you don't have to do that, and then it'll actually still do it.
Do it, yeah.
So we're ready to try this stunning app out. I hope you're really excited. Next page, enter param to send hi page two. And we send it to page two, and then obviously you sent me page two. So there you go. So we've passed some data across. Now that's the basics. Let's look at a more interesting example of a real world app. So that is kind of the basics. We'll come back to that sample as well in a little while. But over here as well, I've got, this is the first time I'm introducing to you an app that if you're watching these, a number of these videos, recordings, or watching this live, you will find this app turning up. It's an app that's a to-do app, which we're going to introduce over and over and introduce some different scenarios to it. Now, this to-do app is pretty basic at the moment. We're going to revisit it in the next one as well. It says try MVA, Microsoft Virtual Academy.
It's delicious.
It's delicious.
Yes.
Yes. so this is our. I'm sorry about the artwork. I am not a graphic designer. This is the best I could manage.
This is developer design.
Developer design. Yeah. Yes. I am a brilliant designer, but I didn't want anybody watching to feel diminished by my glorious skill. So I thought, let's do this basic thing here. So anyway, you can add new tasks in here. Here's an item to do, and we can item, and then it's sort of, and actually it's got a page, so you can actually edit it on a separate page. So there you go. This works on the phone as well, of course, and we can add another item, and this, of course, is underneath here is a list box. So every time we put another item on it, it just adds another one onto it. And it's meant to choose a random picture rather than always come up with the same one. So clearly there's a flaw in my logic somewhere. it's meant to do that. So, and actually, you know, in there you can actually take a photo. And there's me in the studio. Take that, and there we go. And yeah, we'll say that's good enough. And there we are. Now that's in the to-do item as well. So it's got pictures associated with it. Wow. It's cool, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Now, the important thing is that when we go to an item, we are navigating from the list to the edit page. So this is a classic master detail thing.
Yes.
So it's worth having a quick look at how this happens, because, this application uses MVVM pattern. It's using a simplified version of actually what will become the template 10 framework that Jerry's working on. But this, it's all kind of strips out a lot of the more complex stuff. So trying to keep it as simple as possible. So in MVVM, your views, the XAML pages, are just about presentation. And then your logic and everything goes into your view models, and the view model is also responsible for presenting the data to the view. So it's about singularity. It's about things, objects having discrete tasks to do.
And it helps you also, you know, get reuse. You might have a different view for portrait and a different one for landscape, for instance.
Yeah. So just to drill into how that navigation happens in here, we've got our views folder, mm-hmm. and in our main page is where that list view is.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to wait for the designer to load. If we just drill down into the XAML, we've got our list view. Here it is. And we've got our we've got a whole bunch of XAML that changes the styles. But then we've got a header block. Here's the header, which defines the that's actually got the text box in it where I was typing in. That's the quick entry stuff. You know. And we had an app bar button which has the accept icon on it. So that was the tick thing on the UI.
Where the magic's happening.
Yeah. Then here we get to the item template. This is where we define what's going on in the templates. Now, when a user, so the list view is bound to a collection of item view models. So there's a view model class for each item in the list.
Yeah.
And there's also a
selected item. I noticed, and you've got the mode two way. So that means it doesn't just write one way, it also writes back to the view model as well when a selection is made.
But then the important one is item click is to do item clicked. So this is what happens when we click on an item.
You do the navigation here,
You do the navigation. So we go to the definition of that.
Okay.
And actually, here we go. We're calling our navigation service, and we're navigating to do editor page. Now, this is the important thing. So in a list, whenever you click on an item, you actually get a reference to the data item.
Yes.
So we are... The item you clicked on is e-clicked item, and the type of that actually is a to-do item view model.
Yes, it's the data type, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But here we're passing the ID of the item. So every item in our list has got a unique ID, so we're just all we're doing is passing
by reference as opposed to
the ID. So over on the to-do editor page here, we are.
I'm assuming from a data source, you're taking that ID and then loading it.
Exactly, yes.
Back up.
So this has the this is the editor view. Look at the code for this. And nothing much in there because we're using a view model class to encapsulate that. So let's have a look at our to do item view model.
Mm-hmm.
And this has the in here has our unnavigated to async, and here's our parameter comes in here. This is the template 10 framework way of doing it, but essentially that is the ID. And we go off to our repository saying, OK, give me the details. So this uses a repository pattern as well.
Okay.
So there's a lot of goodness in this. Complexity, perhaps, but you know, it's about good patterns. And this, therefore, goes and guts the repository, gets the details of it, and refreshes the current view that would then is what is displayed on the screen. So this is kind of taking that basic navigation a step further and giving us a bit more complexity in a real-world application scenario. All right.
But I'm assuming you don't always have to use these sort of various templates and frameworks. If you want to,
That's why I wanted to show the basic scenario first, saying you don't need this, but you know, professional software engineers perhaps will probably want to use something like this.
Yeah.
But actually, I don't know, even in our own team, there's a lot of preference or otherwise for view models. And
yeah, exactly.
It's one of those religious war kind of topics, and
it's
people like it or they don't like it, or they have their own preferences, you know, so.
Whatever works best for them.
Absolutely, Okay, so handling back navigation then, we need to talk a bit about this. So there's here's the shell drawn back button you get for mobile and tablet. So you actually get this drawn onto the screen or provided in hardware buttons on the phone. And actually in tablet mode, when an app is running immersive on tablet mode, you get a back button drawn onto the taskbar.
So if it's in a window, you won't have the back button. It's only when it's full screen immersive tablet
mode. So in windowed mode, you obviously haven't got that down there.
Yes.
So you need to actually put in, you need to provide the back navigation if you're running in windowed mode. Now, the way to do this is actually to use the There is an API where you can ask the shell to draw one on the top left of the title bar like that. And it's the system navigation manager, get for current view, app view back button visibility. And what you need to do is make that visible if the frame can go back, meaning it's got somewhere to navigate back to. Or make it collapsed if you're on the root page, the frame can't navigate back anymore.
So you should do the check to make sure whether it shows or not. It's not a case of just showing it by default and it'll do its thing.
Exactly so. And I've got a sample in a minute where I can show you the best pattern for doing that.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Or you can provide your, if you don't want to have the shell draw it, you can actually provide your own on canvas back UI. So the choice is yours.
But that's not in the title bar at that point, right? That's in your actual frame
you
of
actually,
your app.
It's part of the content on
there. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
The key message here, obviously, is do the right thing.
Yeah.
Don't provide a back button if the user hasn't, they're pressing it, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
That's so annoying. Yeah. Just only provide back button UI if there's somewhere to go back to.
Yeah, makes sense.
Now, here's the thing. Those shell-drawn back buttons and the phone back button and that sort of thing, they do have a default. They have a default behavior associated with them, and it's not probably what you would expect. So if you go back, if you press like on a phone and you haven't put any code into handle back, what does it do? It navigates back to the previous app, not through the pages. The built-in shell back button doesn't have any idea about the
navigation in your app.
No, there's navigation in your app. You have to put that in.
Yeah.
So there is now in phone 8.1, you used to have to hook the hardware buttons.backpressed event.
Yep.
And you might think actually that API is still available in the
mobile extension
SDK.
Yes.
But don't use it. You don't want it. Don't go there. Because there's a much better way of doing it. There is in the UWP, there's a universal back requested event, which is shown on the bottom there. System Navigation Manager, get for current view, back requested. Now, the way that you will tend to do this is, this is the standard pattern for handling that. So in the right at the end of your on-launched, so
this is in the app.xaml.cs.
This is app.xaml.cs, yes, it's important to mention that. Right at the end of it, after the frame's been created, the window's been created, in fact, even after it's navigated to the first page, you can then hook up your back requested. And you need to do this after the view has been created, because if you call system navigation manager.get for current view in your app.xaml.cs constructor, it hasn't got one yet, so you get a null reference on that.
Yep.
But anyway, once you've got a view, you can hook up the back requested. Now, it's usual to create an event handler there, so that allows your view models, your pages, to intercept it. Because in the app back requested, the first thing it will do is if on back requested does not equal null. So that means if somebody has subscribed to our on back requested event, call, effectively fire that event. So this allows the pages or view models to hook that event and do their own processing on a back requested.
Got you, yeah.
You can actually, you pass that back requested event args to them as well. So if they set handled equals true,
you don't
then
get
you don't
none
do
of
anything
this.
Else. You say, okay, they're done with it.
So it's a way to sort of like intercept
if
they want to at the view model stage.
So then this becomes your default back handling. So if not e.handled, then you navigate back within the frame. So you get the frame, if frame can go back, frame.goback, and then set handled equals true, which stops the shell from then navigating back to the previous app.
Yeah.
Now, this is going to be the default pattern for most apps, apart from the split view, which is a bit different because it's got its own frame.
Yeah, and then it gets complicated there.
You need to do your own handling in that. But this is going to be the standard pattern for most folks. Also, back has other things. The support gestures, Windows backspace, hardware back button, keyboard back, mouse back. They will also automatically call the back requested. So the system back requested, handles all this.
So actually, that is the one to go to.
Possibly mouse back. I don't know. So you do have to think about all these different ways that people can go back. But the thing is, don't strand users and don't hijack back. And by that we mean, do the right thing.
Yeah.
Just test it. Make sure it works. So okay, let's have a look at a specific example of that. I'm going back to, actually I'm done with that. I'm going back to our previous one that we already had. Now, so this is the, so in app.xaml.cs, let's have a look what we've got in here. I can't actually remember what's in this sample. Let me just refresh my memory.
So you can see you've activated the window.
Yeah. So this is our on launched, So we go root frame is frame and that sort of thing. This is where we build our frame. And this is standard. This is in the blank template.
This is, by default, you get all this goodness.
Yeah, this isn't in the standard one. I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. It's about app life cycle. It's all because it's why it's all connected.
And then here
we navigate to our main page. This is where it navigates the first page. And this is where the standard, this is the last line of your standard new project template. And this is where now I've added in some other stuff. So this is where I've hooked in the onback requested. But let's just comment that out for a minute. So let's comment that out and run this thing. This is the one that just goes page one, page two.
Yeah.
And just to prove to you that what happens here is that we go to next page. It goes forwards, all right? It goes back to page two, which doesn't send anything. And then if we go back...
Nothing.
And if you did that on phone, it would navigate out right out of the app. If you press the hardware back button. Yeah. So that's, this is why you need to hook the back requested. So we can do that. And then the other thing, I'm going to comment this out and we'll show the effect of this. Oh, no, I've just actually hijacked my own demo here. Let me comment that out. And I just need to go and fix something on page one temporarily because I've got something interesting. Oh, maybe I haven't. Oh, it's okay. No, it's not there. Okay, we're good. Right. Ill prepared. Right, moving on. We're next page. Now, here you see, we're running in windowed mode.
Yeah.
Actually got...
I've got no way to go back, yeah.
I could run this on the phone and we would have the
hardware back button, so that's slightly different.
On desktop mode, we've got no way of getting back. So this is why the standard pattern starts to work here. Which is to include in your app.xaml. The best way of doing this is this, to hook up the root frame navigated event handler. So every time the root frame navigates, this event handler executes, then says if the root frame can go back, because this is a persistent setting. So once you set the app view back button to be visible,
got you. So
it would stay visible. So you need to check this every time the frame navigates. If the root frame can go back, you set the back button to be visible. This is the frame drawn one. Otherwise, you set it to be collapsed. And this happens every time it navigates, including to main page. But the first time we navigate to main page,
there's nowhere to go back, so you don't see anything
up here. But you go there, and it turns up.
Fantastic.
And I want to show you one other thing with this, is that I have got in this sample a smart back button that Mr. Nixon created. Go off into my toolbox and I've got custom controls back button, so let's just put it up there. And this one, interestingly, it's a smart back button because what it is,
what
it's
makes
on
it
cameras.
Smart, yeah.
Well, well, first of all, no change. It's not showing because it knows when the Chrome back button is
visible. Right.
It knows when it's running on phone that it doesn't need to show because there's a hardware back button there. But if I and now actually comment out that shell drawn back button, so we're not requesting that anymore. Go back to our app.xaml.cs, comment this out, and run it again. Then it's there.
Nice. So where can people get hold of this smart back button?
Well, it'll be in these samples. So all of these are up on GitHub, and we will put on Channel 9 when we publish up the decks and everything.
Fantastic.
We'll give access to everybody to all these samples as well, so you can get the smart back button and all this other goodness.
Fantastic.
All right, so that's that. And that was that. So that's a review, the layout navigation and handling back navigation. Okay, so we're now going to take a 5-minute break.
Yes.
We're actually running a bit late. So 5-minute break. The next one is adaptive UI, which I'm going to try and take a bit quicker. And then so we've got 1 hour to take us through to our lunch, and then we're going to take a whole hour's break.
Yes.
Before we get into the afternoon. So we'll see you in 5 minutes.
All right, cool. Thank you.